superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Happy trails to you.
If you're hiking along the North Country Trail in northern Wisconsin, you might be pretty happy.
Happy trails.
Until it suddenly stops.
The two biggest gaps are kind of on the east and the west ends of the trail.
We'll look at efforts to complete the missing gaps. Plus, he's been a fixture on the Twin Ports music scene for decades, even if he has to share his name. We'll catch up with Duluth's Tony Bennett.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you're a fan of hiking, you're probably familiar with the Appalachian Trail or pass through the Glacier National Park in Montana, even if they're only on your someday, maybe list. But if you're really serious, you could put on that bucket list a trail that comes close to connecting those routes, the North Country National Scenic Trail, stretching 4,800 miles from Vermont to North Dakota. 220 miles of that goes through Wisconsin, except, well, not all of it is complete. As much as we'd love cross-country hikers to stay in Wisconsin, we'd like them to get on their way by finishing the remaining 80 miles of the trail in the Badger State. Much of that is in our region, and completing it was on the agenda of local leaders meeting with lawmakers at Superior Days in Madison earlier this year. One of those trail boosters is Peter Nordgren of Cornucopia, who joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Peter.
Well, hello, Robin. Thank you for having me on today.
So are you a trail booster or a trailblazer?
Well, I'm kind of a trail builder, promoter, trail enjoyer, person who likes to get out there and enjoy the trail.
We have all sorts of trails in the state, of course. It doesn't have to have a fancy name on it. But describe this one for me, both in Wisconsin and beyond. You know, does it have amenities, hiker service stations, things like that?
It certainly does, Robin. And if I can sort of draw the picture of the North Country first in Wisconsin and then the larger trail. This is a trail that is built for hikers. In fact, it was designated by Congress as a national scenic trail and guided in its legislation to be administered by the National Park Service for high quality scenic hiking. Hmm. And so that's what the trail is really designed about. And I will say that when we go out and build a new piece of trail, we are always looking for the most interesting scenery to have it pass through. In Wisconsin, the trail runs across the northern tier of four counties that border Lake Superior. It comes in almost at the northwest corner of Wisconsin from Minnesota, where it has been following the route of the Superior Hiking Trail. Many of our listeners, I'm sure, would be familiar with that trail. And dips down toward Solon Springs. It passes back north to the Iron River area and the Brule area. It goes right across the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, where the trail incidentally was first created. And then it goes near the Drummond area, the Mellon area, and then sort of curves north up to an area that is right on Lake Superior, the Saxon Harbor area, and then it heads on into Michigan. So that's how this trail runs through Wisconsin. On the larger scale, it of course starts out in North Dakota and heads across, making kind of a long curve through northern Minnesota and really taking in the scenic parts of that state. Goes right up by the border in the Boundary Waters area. In Michigan, it goes across the Upper Peninsula through highlights like the Porcupine Mountains. And it runs all the way down lower Michigan and on into Ohio. And it almost goes as far south as Cincinnati, believe it or not. And then it swings north into Pennsylvania and crosses into New York, into the Adirondacks, the Finger Lakes area, and ultimately into the Green Mountains of Vermont. So there's plenty of scenery on this trail.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering places that it stops and starts. We want to get to those in Wisconsin, which is what our main subject is here. But you said it goes from the UP to the Lower Peninsula, or whatever they call the rest of Michigan. To get there, you got to go over the. Do they actually walk on the Mackinac Bridge, or is it time to take a ferry?
Well, most of the time, people will take a shuttle since there is not exactly a walking path on the bridge. But there is one day of the year that one can do that. And
wow.
On Labor Day, one side of the bridge is closed, and there is a mass hike across the bridge, very often led by the governor of Michigan, by the way. And hundreds, if not thousands, of people walk the 5+ miles across the Mackinac Bridge. And people who take the thru-hiker spirit to heart, you know, and have completed all the rest of the bridge will sometimes come back and do that Labor Day hike so they could say, yes, I truly hiked the entire North Country Trail.
Wow. You just put something on my bucket list. I'm going to do that one someday. We are speaking with Peter Nordgren of Cornucopia. He's a backer of the plan to complete a full 220 miles in Wisconsin of the North Country National Scenic Trail that stretches, well, you went from west to east, but I go from east to west, Vermont to North Dakota. So the incomplete part in Wisconsin, what's not complete?
The two biggest gaps are kind of on the east and the west ends of the trail. Since you're thinking east to west, the first gap that we can talk about is between the Saxon Harbor area in Iron County and down to an area east of Copper Falls State Park. And that is, for the most part, in the Iron County forest, the Upson area and points north from there up to Lake Superior. There's a substantial gap there that volunteers like myself are working on. And we have a couple of places where we still need to get easements to cross some private land, but folks are working actively on that. And I'm thinking that that area of trail may be finished, you know, within the next 5 to 10 years. So that's the one gap. The other gap is in two parts, and it's kind of a big gap between the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway down near the St. Croix flowage and Patterson State Park. And there again, we've got a lot of county forest where we could build trail. But we've got, some private ownership that we have to work on to get permissions to go through. And then again, on the other side of Patterson Park, we've got a gap going up toward the border, gap of probably about 10 to 12 miles that needs to be finished. Again, getting easements is the challenge. But there is a section of trail of about 5 miles that we probably can build sometime in the next 3 to 5 years in that gap. So those are where the gaps are. And it's kind of a combination of two things. One is getting the route, and of course the trail can be built only where there are willing sellers of easements to cross private land, and the National Park Service, which provides us leadership, always emphasizes that you know, the trail can be run only where people agree that that it's a good thing to have. The other challenge, of course, is to have the volunteers to build it, since the model that Congress has followed with the National Scenic Trails, and there are 11 of them, is that they provide sort of the guidance in building the trail and make sure that we're in compliance with such things as endangered species and historical preservation. But the work is to be done by volunteers, and that generally is how it gets built.
Uh-huh. So you are a trailblazer after all. So what's the ask of the state, which made it part of Superior Days?
Well, you know, I've mentioned the Park Service working with volunteers, but they also work with state and local governments in building the trail. And in Wisconsin, we have a relationship with between the state and the Park Service that is unique, I would say, among the national scenic trails. I think part of it is because Wisconsin is, I think we're one of just five states that has more than one National Scenic Trail in it. We also have the Ice Age National Scenic Trail that runs in central and southern Wisconsin. So our Department of Natural Resources kind of is the boots on the ground for the Park Service in, you know, helping us get the route and helping us arrange agreements to have the trail on private land. And we are fortunate that in our state we have the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund that the DNR administers. And most of the places where we've acquired easements, or in some cases actually small pieces of land have been purchased for the trail, those have been matched dollars to build the trail that have come out of the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Ice Age Trail. When 2 years ago we had Emily Ford on after she hiked that in winter, yes, which was quite a feat. And as you mentioned, that's a bit south of us. And she went east to west, by the way, so she's going the same direction my mind wants to take us. But it started sort of northeast, dipped south, and then she headed back up to our area. Couldn't that be part of it?
In a word, no. The North Country goes through an extensive planning process that the Park Service has, and it was actually done for Northwest Wisconsin, for example, back in the late 1990s, and that was the point at which I first got involved with the trail. The idea of the North Country Trail is to set it within the true North Country as much as possible. And here in Wisconsin, that vision, you know, goes back to the 1960s when the first section of the trail was built in the National Forest. Essentially, by building that and starting with that piece of trail, it became evident that this was a trail that was going to it was going to make its way across, say, the Upper Peninsula, and it was going to make its way, directly to Minnesota. And that kind of cuts out the prospect of looping it, along the Ice Age. But, in the future, a nice thing that happens periodically is that you do get connecting trails built. And sometimes those are even, sort of community developed. I think of in Wisconsin, we have the Timms Hill National Recreation Trail, and that's a connector trail off of the Ice Age that people in down in Taylor and Price counties decided to build so that they could make a connection between the Ice Age and Timms Hill, which is the highest point in the state of Wisconsin. And that's about a 12-mile trail that local folks went out and built, and then got it registered as a national recreation trail, which is kind of a separate category of national trail. So that might also be possible in the future sometime to build that connector between the Ice Age and the North Country Trail.
And there's certainly nothing wrong with, despite my devil's advocate question, having both. I mean, Emily Ford, if she hasn't done it already, I'm sure she's welcome to do the North Country National Scenic Trail in Wisconsin. And she'll probably go on to Vermont and, Russia or wherever else she
is
walking, since she's pretty good at this.
She would have to take a little longer vacation than she did for the Ice Age, because the fastest time that has ever been done on the North Country end-to-end has been 6 months and 4 days.
All right. Well, that is important to know before you head out. We are speaking with Peter Norgren of Cornucopia. He's a backer of the plan to complete. No, he's a trailblazer. Yes, that's what he is. To complete the full 220 miles in Wisconsin of the North Country National Scenic Trail. And so are there other areas and other states that are not complete? Are we the only delinquent part, or?
We're in pretty good company. I don't have the exact numbers at hand, but I think we may have The highest percentage of our trail within the state complete among the eight states that that have the North Country. If we're not number one, we're number two in that. Other states have other gaps. Probably the state that has really covered a great deal of their trail is Michigan. Most of the trail in the Upper Peninsula is built. Another pretty good gap in the trail is out in the Adirondacks in New York. And there, you know, that is a very special preserve of the state of New York. And it probably took 30 years to go through all the planning process to decide where the North Country Trail should run. That was finally agreed to by the state of New York, I think about 4 or 5 years ago. And now volunteers are actively building the trail through the Adirondacks. So there are other places to volunteer if folks go to other states and happen to want to pitch in a little bit and help out. We're always looking for people who can come out and work with hand tools and help us not only with building the trail tread, but a while back you mentioned amenities, Robin, and we have campsites along the trail for backpackers to use. We have info kiosks that are at our trailheads that require, hammer and saw work to put together. There's a lot that goes into both building and maintaining a trail, and there's lots of opportunities to get involved with other people who are excited about having the trail.
And where can we find out more about that?
The North Country Trail Association, which is the organization I'm involved with, is the official nonprofit partner of the Park Service in overseeing the North Country National Scenic Trail. Our website is northcountrytrail.org. That's a good place to find maps of the trail that you can download and print or download to your smartphone and start finding your way to the trail and the trailheads. And there's also plenty of information there about volunteer opportunities, how people can get involved. And you can also read about the through hikers, the people who do hike the entire trail, and that might sort of whet your appetite to get out there and enjoy it. Most of the people who use the trail are not hiking end to end or even, hiking 100 miles per se. There are people who go out for an afternoon or a day and just walk the trail and enjoy a section of it that may be close by where they live.
What's the most compelling highlight you'd advise?
Well, in Wisconsin, we've got some great highlights. One that I particularly like to share with people is the Brule St. Croix Portage Trail. That's just northwest of Solon Springs, about 4 miles. And it is the historic route between the Mississippi River watershed and the Great Lakes watershed through Lake Superior and through the St. Croix and Brule Rivers. The thing that I think is so fascinating about it is a place where, historically Native peoples would travel between those two watersheds and go, places like down to Prairie du Chien, or they would go out east to Montreal. You could go, most anywhere on the eastern part of the continent, but you had to cross that Portage Trail. And the trail is, well preserved. It looks in many ways, I think, like it did back, when it was first traversed by Europeans who first wrote about it. The first was Daniel Graysel and Sieur Duluth, has a city named after him near us. And he wrote about the challenge of getting up the Brule River and had to navigate a bunch of beaver dams. And then he wrote about the experience of carrying his canoes and whatever goods he had with him over this portage that is still there that you can walk on too. And it's part of the North Country Trail.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Peter Northgren. He's with the North Country Trail Association, who are backers of a plan to complete a full 220 miles in Wisconsin of the trail, the whole national trail that stretches from Vermont to North Dakota if you're going east to west, or North Dakota to Vermont if you want to go the opposite direction. Either way, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Thank you for joining us, Peter.
Well, thank you for having me, Robin, and hope to see you out on the trail.
Coming up, the Twin Ports' own Tony Bennett.
Said that you had nothing. Today I am your everything.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Anyone who's the least bit familiar with popular music over the last 75 years knows the name Tony Bennett. And at age 96, he's still going strong with his voice as smooth as ever. But that's not the Tony Bennett we're talking about today. If your focus is the Twin Ports music scene of the last two decades, you know we have our own Tony Bennett. He's frequently associated with the Homegrown Music Festival, though one of his bands, The Dames, predates the festival going back to 1996. He's also noted for playing with the group Cars and Trucks, as well as his solo act, which he's been bringing to Earth Rider Brewery's Cedar Lounge in Superior most of this month. And he joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Tony Bennett.
Hey, Robin. Thanks for having me on.
So I thought I'd get the Tony Bennett thing out of the way up front, okay?
But you can't get away with not mentioning it, because people would just be confused if they'd never heard of me. They would just, you know, wonder what's going on and how you scored such a great guest.
Well, we do have a great guest, but you know, that's a good point. I mean, if you didn't, all you're doing is confusing people, right? I mean,
yeah, pretty much, you know. Well, that's why I have to play under the name Anthony, you know, because I've never been called Anthony in my whole life. You know, no one's ever called me that. I only called that, you know, when I was younger and my mother was really angry with me,
right?
You know, she would call me Anthony, but I've been Tony to everyone I've ever known. And when you want to go and play a solo show, you can't have the name Frank Sinatra, because it turns out there's already a Frank Sinatra.
Well, I don't know. Frank Sinatra Jr. got away with it.
Yeah, I should have done that. I should have just added a Jr.
Actually, in all seriousness, Josh White Jr. In Chicago, who I don't know if he's still around, used to hear him or hear of him in the 70s and 80s, was not Josh White's son. He wasn't related at all. He was a good guy, but took the name Josh White Jr. Even as I say that, I'm wondering, can you do that? But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I should have tried it and see what happened.
Well, you're the real Tony Bennett, or a real Tony Bennett. And I do want to hear what your musical upbringing was like. Having that name had to have an influence on you, even though your music is totally different.
I mean, before I had even heard of a note of his music, I was aware that my name was weird, because it would be usually, you know, meeting, I would be with my parents and they'd, you know, introduce me in the grocery store, or the first day of school, I always remember, was always a big deal for teachers, because, you know, it would get to be, by a certain point in my life, I could kind of predict the reaction. Like, you know, they'd be reading the role and they'd get to me, you know, Tony Bennett, oh, hey, can you sing me a few bars?
No.
You know, that's the thing you always hear is, can you sing me a few bars?
Right.
Or I Left My Heart in San Francisco. You know, they always mention that song.
Right.
But I was a kid. I didn't know who the hell he was. I knew that I had the name that a singer had. And,
so what, you know, led you to becoming a musician? Did that have anything to do with it? At least put it on your radar?
No. I mean, maybe a psychiatrist or something could could dig out a nugget of inspiration there or something. I don't know. But I, you know, when I think about it now, I think a lot about my grandfather, as well as my dad too. Like, my dad would talk about filling in a local band. There was this band called the Titans, and he hung around them, and he said that he filled in a couple of times. But my grandpa, you know, he always would be playing the acoustic guitar, and, you know, of course, then I'd pick it up. And my grandma had a Hammond organ, not a really great Hammond, but like one of those Schmidt Hammonds where you kind of press the button and the cord would sound, and you know, it had a little rudimentary drum machine in it. So I'd always be fooling around with that and fooling around with the, you know, my grandpa had a harmonica and I'd play that. And so I was encouraged to make noise pretty early on, and I took advantage of that sort of invitation, and I started playing. I didn't really, you know, I always sort of loved music, but it wasn't until I was around 10 or 11 that I really started getting obsessed with it. And I got really into, like, I can remember buying a Def Leppard album on the day it came out, Def Leppard's Hysteria in 1987, and I was 11 years old. And That was like waiting, you know, just waiting and waiting for weeks and then days and then hours to get that album, you know. And from then on, it was just I've always just obsessed over music and just love it so much more than any art form. There's always something magical about it for me.
Well, Def Leppard is definitely a different genre than that other Tony Bennett. Tell us about the Dames and Cars and Trucks. Do they each have different styles of music, or is there an overlap there in your solo career too?
Yeah, I didn't really mean to make things happen the way that they did. I, like, you know, I had a high school band called Relapse, and that was, you know, 93 or so to like 95. Made a couple of albums, and it was mostly just learning how to do it. But the Danes started in 1996, and that was really when it was like, okay, I'm 20 years old. I know what I've been writing songs for a long time. I know how to play in a band. This is going to be the band that really does it, you know. And we had a little bit of a false start. You know, we had some problems with a drummer and some health issues, and then, you know, we finally got the right drummer and we hit it pretty hard from like 98. I think 1998, we were voted one of the best new bands by First Avenue down in the cities, and got to play a showcase, and, you know, started getting shows with national acts. You know, we started playing with bands like Queens of the Stone Age or Mastodon or High on Fire and all these like kind of big names in that scene. And then we were suddenly included. Like we were always obsessed with this band called the Melvins, and they grew up with Nirvana, you know, if that helps. Mm-hmm. We were always obsessed with them and got to do some shows with them. And so that the Danes days was an amazing time, but it was also a time where we were young men and we were kind of at each other's throats a lot and weren't always on the same page.
Never happens in a group. No, no, no.
No, especially not after tons of time spent in a stinky van together driving all over. Yeah. So I don't know. By the time I got to my 30s, I was like, okay, I'm done making a run at the title here. We're just going to have fun. And so me and the drummer and another friend just started Cars and Trucks. And that was a more pop kind of oriented, Kinks, Beatles, you know, Cheap Trick type stuff. But I've always written all kinds of different stuff. I suppose it's just you don't want to stick all the styles of music into one band, because then it's a little bit of a big ask for the kinds of crowds that you play in front of, you know, because like the Danes would often get put on bills with really heavy bands. And then we'd have some songs that were more like Cars and Trucks pop songs, and we'd realize we can't play this song tonight. We'll look like idiots, you know. We don't want to come off like the Monkees, even though I love the Monkees, you know. So it's like your circumstances kind of dictate a little bit of what you do. Sure. And then Cars and Trucks was the chance for me to really be like, okay, I've always been a big pop music fan, so here's our version of the Who or whatever. So, and then, you know, I just turned 47, and now my 40s has been just looking back and like reuniting the bands and seeing how we do when we're at a little bit of a more advanced age. Mm-hmm. And it's been an interesting ride, but, you know, I'm playing solo too on the side, and I've made electronic music albums, and, you know, I'm always doing something.
We're speaking with Tony Bennett, a.k.a. Anthony Bennett, just in case. He's performing at Earthrider Brewery for several performances this month. So let's hear one of your tunes. How about Here For You? Can you set that one up for us? And by the way, is this solo or with the group?
Yeah, that's a solo one. That'll be the kind of stuff I play at the show, you know, just me sitting in a chair with an acoustic. This is probably a really old song. I would guess that's late 90s. But it's always been one that I like singing.
All right, here is Here For You by Deluce Tony Bennett.
Yesterday you said that you had nothing. Today I am your everything. But still it seems to me that you are foolish, and you won't even notice when I leave. I said you won't even notice when I leave. I am here for you. Oh, why are you not here for me? That you were leaving. Today you promised all your love. Seems everything I say is the wrong thing. All I want is to get right with you. I said all I want is to get right with you. I am here for you. Oh, why are you not here for me? I am.
Tony Bennett. He's been performing at Earth Rider Brewery this month. You could call it a residency a couple times it just passed, and again next Wednesday the 26th. Am I correct that of all the clubs and all the gin joints in the Twin Forts you've performed at over the last 20 years, this is your debut at Earth Rider?
Yeah, I don't know why.
How'd you miss that?
They haven't called.
They got railroad tracks right there. You can follow them. Well, you've also written about the local music scene, filling in, I can say this, for Krista Waller when she was on maternity leave at the News Tribune. How old is her kid? So we can figure out exactly when that was. What's your approach to music criticism?
Oh, man. Well, my approach now is I don't approach it at all because nobody pays me to do it, but I got to do it for 8 years.
Sure.
You know, got some death threats from people's moms.
Okay. I asked the approach, not the result. Yes. But what is the approach? I mean, you know, how do you say what's good or bad or, you know, in more sophisticated terms, obviously you don't want to just say good or bad.
I just have to be able to say what I think, and people are going to get mad because I guess I don't see the use in being a critic and being relied upon for your opinion unless you're giving your honest opinion. And sometimes bad music is really hard to stomach. And so the only way you can deal with it is to write about it, hopefully in an entertaining, maybe even funny way, you know. But it was difficult for a long time because I had, you know, there was a thing where Paul Stanley from Kiss read the review that I did of a Kiss concert, and he went online and called me an a-hole. And then the Kiss Army was sicked on me. So I was getting all these messages talking about how I was, you know, lacking in all these various areas.
It's refreshing to hear this because I was afraid when you said bad music, you were talking about our local performers, but not necessarily. You're talking about internationally famous people who you would expect more.
But local, too. I mean, I gave bad reviews to my friends a few different times. But they're just like, oh, that's fine. Don't worry about it. I know you're not into what I'm doing.
Right.
Like, I think musicians are, you know, sometimes they're mature about it. Some aren't as mature, but I guess I don't miss it just because there's a lot of negativity that comes along with it. But I guess I miss the regular gig.
All right. Well, going back to regular gigs, how about another song? I'm going to suggest here Can of Worms, which I got to say has got to be minimally inspired by the I-35, 535 interchange, no?
It's absolutely not. but you're not the first person to make that connection.
Well, what is it about?
I don't know. See, that's always a difficult question.
Then you should have stayed with the interchange.
It's, you know, some songs I know what they're about. Some songs I have a dim idea of what they're about. And some songs are just a bunch of words that sound good together. And I think that's this one's probably the latter.
All right. Here's Can of Worms by Tony Bennett.
1, 2, 3. Thank you.
was Can of Worms by Tony Bennett. He has been appearing at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior several times this month and once more coming up this Wednesday. Where can we learn more about your music?
I've got Bandcamp pages. You can find the Danes and Cars and Trucks, and the Anthony Bennett solo stuff is all on there. I've got a thing called Feed Math, which is like a bunch of homemade electronic sort of music. There's everything's on Bandcamp, and you know, Google me.
All right. How about one more to take us out? I am going to suggest Starting a War, which, if I may make one last Tony Bennett reference, is something he'd probably never sing about.
No, and this one, actually, I can give you a little tidbit about this one, is that that's a reference to the Bush doctrine of preemptive war, and I took that horrible idea and kind of put it in a romantic context.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Tony Bennett, a.k.a. Anthony Bennett. He's performing at Earth Rider Brewery next Wednesday, the third time this month. Thank you for joining us, Tony.
Hey, it's been great. Appreciate you calling me and having me coming on your show.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Shalon Monroe, multimedia journalist for WDIO-TV. Hello, Shalon.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, there were a few snow flurries this third week in April. Did we do it?
Yes, we did. It's official. The 2 inches of new snow that fell Wednesday night and Thursday morning at the National Weather Service in Duluth was enough to propel the winter of 2022-2023 to the snowiest since records have been kept, started in 1870. Duluth's seasonal snowfall total as of 6 a.m. Thursday sat at 137.1 inches, topping the previous record of 135.4 that fell in the winter of 1995 and 96. And it hasn't just been snowy in Duluth. Bayfield has a new record of 171.6. To say it's been a long winter has been an understatement at best. Duluth received its first measurable snow of 2 inches on October 14. So this has been going on for more than 6 months. Duluth has had at least a trace of snow on the ground every day since November 11. And as much as 37 inches of snow on the ground on March 12 and 13 and carried 32 inches into April. One of only four times in history that there's been that much snow on the ground in April in Duluth.
All right. Well, when that snow is cleared, you might feel what's underneath it on the roads.
Yes, it's pothole season, Robin, or actually maybe pothole filling season is more accurate. The city of Duluth pulled its crew of 30-plus snowplow drivers from the road last week, although they may need them here yet with some snow still falling, but handed them shovels instead to begin the daunting task of filling potholes. This winter has taken a particularly harsh toll on local streets, punching holes not only in the pavement, but also in the city's snow removal budget. The city's street maintenance department racked up more than $295,000 in overtime in 2022, more than 2.5 times what it had budgeted for the calendar year. But overtime costs since January have amounted to another $118,000, already consuming more than 60% of the amount budgeted for the entire calendar year. Now, these frequent snowfalls this winter have regularly kept rigs on the road, leading to higher fuel expenses as well. During the calendar year 2022, the street maintenance department spent more than $462,000 on gasoline, exceeding the fuel budget by well over $100,000. And so far this year, the department has already burnt through more than $118,000 worth of fuel, consuming more than 60% of the year's fuel budget. Harsh winter can deliver sort of a double whammy with higher than anticipated snow removal costs, followed by extensive and expensive repairs. Frequent plowing can also be hard on streets, causing asphalt to pop loose from previously filled potholes.
All right. Well, if the crews haven't gotten to your favorite pothole yet, you might complain to the city about that. But don't call 911 unless it's a real emergency. The fire department has been especially busy lately.
Yes, it has. 2022 will go down in the books as one of the busiest ever for the Duluth Fire Department. The department responded to 15,281 calls in 2022, breaking the 15,000 mark for the first time in its history. Already the third busiest fire department in Minnesota, ranking behind only Minneapolis and St. Paul, Duluth's call volume for 2022 represents a 3.2% increase compared with the 14,800 calls local firefighters responded to the previous year. Meanwhile, the department struggled with a large number of retirements and departures, with a number of younger firefighters leaving Duluth to pursue opportunities elsewhere. On top of that, nine firefighters took extended leaves to fulfill military service obligations. So staff responded by picking up extra shifts and working extra overtime. While calls for service were up overall, leaders noted that the 291 fire calls the department received in 2022 actually reflects a slight dip from the 315 fire runs recorded the previous year. Also, water rescues fell to 18 in 2022, less than half the number responded to in 2021, when it responded to 39 calls for help on the water.
All right. Well, going across the water to Superior, Shalon, a couple of weeks ago, that Duluth was one of four small cities slated to get an Arena Football League team, but Superior had some NFL players in town. Are they getting a team or what?
No, they're not getting a team, but they kind of already have one. If you look at the Green Bay Packers, they stopped into town for their 2023 Packers tailgate tour. Now, they stopped in Superior first at the Richard Baum Center, and some of the current and former players, including Aaron Jones and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, stopped there to kind of have breakfast and to talk about you know, things going on with the veterans as well. And from there, they went on to surprise some kids at Superior High School and Middle School, where Clinton Dix talked about really, you know, building a community, toughness with the kids, while also signing autographs and taking photos as well. Now, along with visiting Superior, they also made stops in Ashland and Western and Northern Wisconsin. And from there, their stop continued all the way up until Saturday, April the 15th. So it was a week long of just, you know, seeing fans, having fun, and just kind of exploring a different part of Wisconsin than what they're used to.
All right. Well, you mentioned Superior High School. The Vikings are honoring a famed graduate of that school.
Yes, they are. There will be a public celebration of life for NFL Hall of Famer coach Bud Grant on Sunday, May the 21st at U.S. Bank Stadium. Now, Grant passed away last month, and he was the Vikings head coach from 1967 to 1983, plus the 1985 season. He compiled a career record of 168 wins and 108 losses, leading the Vikings to 11 division titles and four Super Bowl appearance. Now, the ceremony will start at noon and doors will be open at 11 a.m. To honor Grant, organizers say they would like attendees to wear outdoor or team apparel, as he was an avid sportsman. Now, fans will be able to reserve up to six seats by going online to viking.com/legends/Bud-Grant. You can also call the ticket office at 612-338-4537.
All right. You know, speaking of apparel, you might want to bring with you, if you have one, a Duluth Eskimos leather helmet, such as the one worn by Bud Grant's father that Bud Grant displayed at a Superior High School tribute to him in 2013.
Wow.
Right. So, all right. Well, we've been joined by Shalon Monroe, multimedia journalist for WDIO-TV. Thank you, Shalon.
Thank you so much.
And Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org, DuluthNewsTribune.com, and WDIO.com. And that's it for this edition of Something Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of our own Tony Bennett. Stay safe, everyone.
I wasn't tired until I laid my head down. I wasn't lost before my mouth was drawn. I wasn't relieved to find out you had not been here. It must have been your apparition. Must have been your smile and gold. I could venture a guess, but I would probably be wrong. Pull out a knife and take a stab in the back.